welcome to episode 18 of Alan Fell's Norwich City Football Club We Meet Again series. And it's a bonus episode thanks to the FA Cup gods pulling Charlton out of the hat. And Fell, we talked about the roller coaster analogy, didn't we, before? Where are we now? Yeah. We're rocketing down, aren't we?
We were definitely on the downward trajectory, yeah. And I'm not sure we've hit the bottom of the pit yet either, which is most concerning.
Does it feel like it's gathering speed on the roller coaster?
Well, put it this way. We're recording this about 2 hours roughly before we play Crystal Palace away. So it doesn't feel like we've hit the bottom yet, but we might do it about 3 hours' time.
Yeah, I've heard some pretty grim stuff about the Arsenal game.
Yeah.
You turned up, didn't you?
Yeah.
Stayed the full 90 minutes?
I always stayed the full 90 minutes.
I bet you were the minority, were you, would you say?
Yeah. There was a lot of disconnects amongst the fans. And I totally get it. And I expect you, like, off-air with this. It was the first time ever in my Norwich City career as a fan that I would have been happy about him called off. Like, I was kind of, like, checking Twitter, and I was actually a little bit disappointed the game had been called off. It was raining, and we were just going to get thrashed by them. My mindset also was, to be fair, that we had most of the team out of coronavirus. So what made it even more depressing is we actually had quite a strong squad out, and we still didn't lay a glove on them. I think that actually made it worse.
Yeah, and then it didn't help your other sporting heroes, England cricket team.
I mean, any positive about England cricket team is at least they haven't kept us up late, have they? It was like, well, didn't have to put too many 3 or 4 a.m. out the hat. It was like, you know.
So you're on two downward roller coaster rides at the moment, aren't you?
Exactly.
With the cricket and the football.
Yeah, cricket and football and football. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'm not sure if there's going to be much to boost the morale on this one, really.
Okay.
But at the same time, nothing overly to increase the dismal atmosphere either. I think it's a bit of a mid-table podcast.
I've got a couple of good memories from Charlton. Well, one good memory from Charlton anyway, which was after a bad memory. So,
okay, yeah, I think, yeah, if I'm correct, I think these might be down here.
Okay.
So Charlton, yeah, I think we talked about it in the Brighton episode that they were once the model club. Do you remember in the early 2000s, they were consistently finishing sort of upper mid-table in the Premier League, weren't they? And everyone was saying Norwich should be basing themselves on Charlton.
Yeah, the Alan Kurbish team.
That's it.
A bit of a managerial phenomenon.
Yeah.
In that he's never really taken another job on, has he, since that? He had, I think, went to West Ham on like a caretaker basis, maybe. But he did perform miracles at Charlton.
I mean, he was... His name was banded around with the England job a couple of times, I think.
And, yeah, looking at the record, you have to say fair enough. I mean, the interesting thing was, I remember with Charlton, they always seemed to declare around about sort of like end of February. They always used to get a total.
And, yeah.
All right, you have a set a target for now, let's have a go at that. And they always used to sort of like, you know, be kind of almost top 5 or 6. But like, and then they always sort of end up about 10th or 11th. But, you know, that was absolutely fine. And I remember listening to 606 back in the day, like we would have done. And obviously, Charlton fans just got fed up with it. And they were like, well, we want more than this. We can't keep on.
We want to kick on.
And it's a point of view I sympathise with. Because obviously, it's frustrating to think your team had reached the ceiling. And maybe what we're looking at in Norwich at the moment kind of feels that, you know, the top of the championship isn't the top of the ceiling for us, but the bottom of the Premier League maybe is. And it's just frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, it's how do you break that ceiling, isn't it? I guess Charlton had that issue.
Yeah.
And we could probably name dozens and dozens of clubs that have got that conundrum, isn't it? How do we break it and progress as a club?
And ultimately, obviously, they tried to move things on and Kurbishley moved on and it didn't work out for them.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kurbishley, when he first became their manager, did you know that they tried the joint manager thing? And it was a chap called Steve Gritt. So you don't see it often in football, do you? I think Liverpool tried it with Roy Evans and Gerald Houllier. Yeah. Although I think that was more they didn't have the heart to sack Roy Evans because he was such a club legend that they kind of gave him the job alongside Houllier.
It's certainly something which is not heard of much now, isn't it? It's like the whole, I think we talked about the player manager thing.
Yeah.
Again, that's something you just don't hear much of anymore, is it? That's kind of something that went out of date in the 80s with tie-dye t-shirts.
Why do you think it never really works? Do you think if you looked at it logically, you think it's got to be a win-win because if you've got two managers, you've probably got two areas of expertise, haven't you? And
yeah, I mean, I certainly think that you get duos in football which work well together. But I think the problem comes when you have the two people don't agree on a specific situation.
Team selection.
Tactic, player to drop, yeah. Exactly. And then what happens? I think you really need someone in a superior position.
Maybe it goes to a vote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, ask the players. So I guess it doesn't work like that. I mean, like, I know obviously there's Brian Clough and Peter Taylor, wasn't it? Like, phenomenal duo.
Yeah, but they always, Clough was the manager.
And I think that's the better way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think obviously, like, we probably had that with Paul Lambert and Culverhouse.
Yeah.
And Gary Kasser maybe as well. But obviously there's always one person in control. And I think ultimately you have to have that one person to say, that, you know, fair enough, I respect your point of view, but this is my call, we're doing it like this.
Yeah.
And I think, I just can't see it working with two managers.
So I was going to use this opportunity to put a question to you. So we're going to go down the joint manager route at Norwich. If you could do a double act, pick any two Norwich managers, which ones would you pick?
Well, I think we need a tactical genius and a motivator. So in terms of motivation, I'm going Lambert, actually, controversially.
Oh, okay. The only thing I would say of Lambert is he'd be the least likely to work in a...
Oh, no, he wouldn't work at all. He'd be horrific. I think for like a motivational point of view, I think of Lambert. And I think a tactical point of view, I'm going to go Mike Walker, actually.
Okay.
I think as a coach, I think the way you got a team play, I would be tempted to go for Daniel Farke, Lambert and Farke. I don't know. Farke's tactics were brilliant in the Championship.
Yeah.
They seem to be absolutely awful in the Premier League.
Yeah.
However, now we sit a month or so after his departure and thinking, you know what, maybe we are just terrible. maybe it wasn't his fault after all. So I don't know. But I'm going for Lambert and Walker. I think
that's right. And I think those two would work quite well. So Walker's probably a bit more calm. He's the wise old head, isn't he?
Exactly that, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I was thinking the worst combo would be Lambert and Alex Neil. There's too much Scottish testosterone flying around there, isn't there?
That'd be absolutely brilliant. There'd be a fight before every... Can you imagine there's a fight for a substitution? That'd be hilarious.
Although the fear factor might work in their favour if them two were in charge.
That's been terrifying.
I would probably have Farke. I don't know whether I've been wooed again by that continental influence. Again, yeah, the style of football, I guess, track record with youngsters. So I'd be tempted to have him. And I was thinking Mike Walker as well. Farke-Walker combo.
I think that'd work quite well. The other name is worth chucking in a hat, actually. And I don't know if it's quite qualified. So there's only really caretaker manager, but Irvine.
You liked him, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought he did really well, and he's obviously quite aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
Quite happy to assume the coaching side of it. Happy to bring youngsters on. I think he would work, if you're going to have a dual management situation, I think he is one character which would work well in that situation.
Yeah. What about having, for one season only, every Norwich manager rocking up? There's a team of managers.
Or just have a guest every week, like, on Have I Got News for You? This is guest manager from 2003, 2004, Nigel Wellington.
It'd be like England football used to do it. And I don't know if the cricket still does it, where you have a committee, don't you, that kind of picks the squad.
Yeah, they have a team of selectors.
Selectors.
Yeah.
Maybe for one season only, we could have all the Norwich managers as a selection team. Yeah.
Oh, exactly that. And it all has to go through a voting process, yeah. There's always going to be one person who vetoes everything, isn't there? That would be Lambert, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, an interesting point to ponder. I was going to talk about Charlton played in one of the greatest ever playoff finals. Do you remember they drew 4-4 with Sunderland and beat them 7-6 on pens? This was back in 1998. And a couple of player connections in that game. So the Charlton fullbacks that day were Mark Bowen, who we've obviously talked about.
Yeah, quality player.
Do you want to hazard a guess at the other fullback who's a player connection who played that day at Wembley? Charlton actually signed him from us.
Honestly.
At the earlier stage of his career, it was obviously Mark Bowen was at the opposite end of the scale.
I can't think.
Norwich lad.
Doesn't think Danny Mills.
It's Danny Mills.
It is Danny Mills. Yeah. He didn't show me.
Yeah, he did.
I couldn't remember which way he went. I knew he went to Leeds after us, but.
Yeah.
So he went to from Championship to Championship, effectively.
He did, although he went from mid-table going nowhere.
Yeah,
Championship so too. I think Charlton were almost in the yo-yo territory then, and it proved right because they went up.
Yeah, and he obviously went up to England. I mean, obviously, I think Danny Mills, from what I've obviously, without knowing anything about the club, I'm not sure he was really a tenable position at the club anymore. Was he? I think everyone had fallen out.
Yeah, something happened there, didn't it?
Exactly that.
I don't quite know.
Yeah.
So obviously, he's a local lad.
Yeah.
But he did leave quite early. And in his career, didn't he? So he was a big player connection. And then, Phil, do you think Charlton have ever won the FA Cup?
I'm going to go yes.
Yes.
I'm sure they have, yeah. Why not?
They have. They've lifted it, yeah. So
I said 1947.
It was, yeah. Was that a guess or?
Was it really?
Yeah.
Genuinely?
Genuinely.
That's an absolute guess.
Was it? Yeah. I'm really confused though.
100% guess.
I could see you. There's no internet. Action going on. They won the FA Cup only once in 1947.
Oh, wow. Okay. There we go.
Should we keep this bizarre run going? Do you know who they beat?
I mean, it obviously wasn't Norwich. We've not been to a final. I'm going to go for Blackburn.
Close, though. Burnley.
Oh, no. Not Burnley.
They beat Burnley 1-0.
I'll tell you, like, Blackburn's the closest rivals. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's okay. I mean, I'm worried I've used up all my luck today before we play
Palace. I think you should put a bet on. No, with this sort of sixth sense kicking in. They were runners up in 1946, yeah, and they won it in 47, so they've lifted the cup. And then I had to dig in and look this one up. It's normally last meetings, it's really obvious. 90% of these episodes have been either last season or the season before.
Yeah.
Charlton, we actually last played them in the year we went up in the playoff final.
Yeah.
2014-15, they actually finished mid-table. And I couldn't remember any of these games, so I had to look them up. And apparently we won 3-2 away.
Yeah. And did we draw at home?
We lost 1-0 at home.
Oh, we did. And I remember that.
Yeah. Did you go? Did you know?
Yeah, it was a game we actually outplayed them. It was one of those typical games we're all over them. And if I remember rightly, the shot was a deflected effort off Bradley Johnson.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a sucker punch kind of thing.
It was.
And it happens in that league.
Johnny Jackson I think it was him that scored. It was a late goal. So it was a proper.
It was a sucker punch. It's one of those games where like stats would be probably like 65% possession.
Yeah.
Like 15 shots. Yeah, we didn't really. It's the same old story. Like you get those games in the Championship, don't you? You sort of put them to bed.
Yeah.
And they're sort of frustrating. I think when people think about, the Championship's better than the Premier League, it's like, sometimes they can be equally as frustrating. And that was exactly one of those games. And I remember Bradley Johnson didn't really get close enough to block the shot. And when you don't get close enough, that sort of thing can happen, is it?
Yeah.
Picks up a deflection. But obviously, he was then superb for the second half of the season. Well, yeah. I think the home game was earlier in the season.
It was, yeah. So the home game was actually under Neil Adams.
Right.
And we were top. And so it was about October, November time.
Yeah.
The away game was under Alex Neil in mid-February, so quite early in his reign.
Oh, I think.
And we were seventh, actually, so you could see how we'd dropped off. We hadn't even gotten to the playoffs at that stage, but I think we were beginning to turn things around. And we won 3-2, and this is only through reading the match reports. I had no recollection of this, but apparently we were 2-0 up at half-time.
Right.
Let them back in, and they were on quite a bad run of form at the time. It was 2-2.
Yeah.
And then you know what it's like when you're on these runs, the momentum's with you. And Jerome got a late-ish winner.
I do remember it absolutely, because I remember being on Twitter and following it on radio, and also I was on Twitter saying, you know, when we got back to 2-2, I was like, well, you know, we just have to accept the fact we're just not good enough to go up.
Yeah.
And obviously scored like a late winner. I was like, oh, yeah, we're brilliant. It was probably a game that showed our shortcomings, which is defensively.
Yeah.
But also showed we had the firepower to get out that league.
Yeah.
Cameron Drone, it was a hell of a player for that level.
He was, yeah. Yeah, I really liked him.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, he wasn't that far below Premier League level, really, was he?
I mean, he was, you know, quite happily in his heyday. But he was a Premier League sort of stalwart, really, wasn't he, for quite a few years? And we kind of got him like late 20s, didn't he? So he's got sort of like not necessarily a downward curve, but yeah, he was certainly a good signing for a Championship side, as it proved to be the case.
Yeah, is he at Milton Keynes now or somewhere like that? Or
he certainly was. I don't know if he still is, but he certainly was at MK Dons.
He was,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
We have played them more recently, 2017. Again, I couldn't remember this, but we played them in the League Cup and we actually beat them 4-1 at home, which I guess it would have been in like probably the first round. Or
yeah, I do remember that game. I'm pretty sure I was there. Did Tommy Tribal score?
I don't know the scorers, yeah.
It's a League Cup game and they sort of early rounds, you can't don't take much notice of them really. You can't trundle up. I was going with my mate Adam and his kid George actually. It's George's first game. And
any way you can get tickets probably, isn't it?
Well, it was back then. Those games, yeah. So, and there's also a bit of optimism and excitement around Farke, although, it hadn't really kicked in then. But I remember Tommy Tribal coming on and looking really good quality. I'm sure he scored as well.
Yeah.
And I remember, saying that Tommy Tribal's the man.
And he was to an extent, wasn't
he? Yeah, but obviously Premier League's a different kettle of fish, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's the last time we played them. And then just dipping into the early days, they didn't bother with the Southern Leagues. We've talked about the Southern League with teams like Spurs and West Ham and I think Southampton and Brighton and us. They shunned that. They preferred to stay in their own little London League.
Yeah, really?
But their big break was that, did you know Arsenal used to be based in that area of London? So it was Woolwich Arsenal.
Yeah, I did, because they moved into Tottenham's area, didn't they?
They did.
They were from Woolwich, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they were sort of from safe London. And they were obviously the number one team. So I think once they moved up north, so to speak, it created this huge opportunity.
Yeah.
It's like vacuum, and Charlton suddenly became the number one side in that area of London.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they really kicked on after that. We first played them in Division 3 safe. Boxing Day, we lost 2-1 at the Valley.
Yeah.
And then on the 27th, so the day after, we beat them 2-0 at home. So it's those consecutive days, isn't it? Why can't they do that now?
That would be much more fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because this season, just thinking about it, obviously, we'd start off even worse than the league, but we would have got Liverpool, Man City, Leicester, Arsenal out the way kind of in the first few weeks of the season, wouldn't they? They'd have been done and dusted by now.
Do you think you should play the whole season, every day? So play a game every day, and then the season would be condensed into a couple of months, wouldn't it?
Yeah, 1.5 months, job done.
And then they could have 10 months of rest,
can't they? Just don't stop moaning about it, yeah. You're 10 months off now, so go and relax.
Not great for the supporter, actually, though, is it? You're travelling home and away every day for 2 months.
Yeah, home and away season ticket holders would deserve a special bit for that one.
Yeah, and then a couple of big wins against them in promotion winning season. So in 1935, they won promotion to Division 1, to the top flight for the first time, despite losing at Carrow Road. And then we doubled them in 71-72 when we were first ever promoted to the top flight. 81-82, we thrashed them 5-0 on the 10th of April, 82.
Excellent.
Big win.
Is that top flight?
No, this is on our way up.
Okay.
So, yet again, another promotion season from the Championship, or Division 2 it was called then.
Yeah.
And then in 1985-86, we both got promoted from the Championship to Division 1.
Okay.
So they finished runners-up, and we won the league that season.
Yeah.
So obviously, we played them on Boxing Day, so that's top-of-the-table clash on Boxing Day, I bet. You'd be a lot more up for that than you were for the Arsenal.
Exactly that.
You wouldn't have been wanting that one to be cancelled,
exactly,
would you?
Exactly, no, you'd be well up for that one.
Yeah. And we beat them 3-1. They beat us in the running, but obviously it made no difference. We both went up. I don't know if you're aware, they were one of the first clubs to lose their home, so they lost. They ended up leaving the Valley during the mid-80s, so they were. We talked about Crystal Palace being landlords, so they were one of the tenants back then. So they had this weird position where they actually, I think it's the first season that they lost their ground and had to play at Sellers Park. They actually got promoted.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So it became like a lucky ground.
Yeah.
Oh, that is weird, isn't it? Yeah. Like, why do teams lose Graham? I mean, financial reasons, obviously.
I guess so, yeah. I don't know what happened to the Falley. The Falley was huge as well. I had a look, and their record attendance at the Falley was like 75,000.
Bloody hell. It's
a massive bowl, yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I think we've talked about this, certainly probably in the Coventry episode, what it'd be like to play the last ever game at Carrow Road.
Yeah, it'd be pretty tragic. And, you know, you talk about where we'd move to.
Yeah, exactly.
Trashy Avalanche stuff.
Yeah, I mean, at least they had a few close options.
Yeah.
But it's weird how that, whether that, you talk about siege mentality in dressing rooms, you know, whether that kicked them on and a period of homelessness coincided with one of their best sort of periods in their history.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably like an element of that, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it does seem an odd coincidence, doesn't it?
Yeah. We talk football in theories. Do you believe in the old siege mentality? You hear it a lot. Managers love it, don't they?
There's certainly
Paul Lambert, does he like siege mentality?
He loved it, didn't he? He actually loved it. I mean, I certainly think there's some truth to that. I mean, I think
psychology, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you get teams like Norwich under Paul Lambert. Is like, it didn't matter that we're playing the big team. We gave as good as we got. Yeah, and I think we had it quite a few times under Lambert. I think if we look back, I mean, it's a game we lost, to be fair, heavily, but we lost at home 7-3 to Man City.
Okay.
But the thing was, the scoreline doesn't really tell the story.
Yeah.
I think at one point, I think it went 3-0 up quite quickly, but I think we got it back to 3-2, and then it was like 4-2 and 4-3, and
yeah,
we were pushing and they carried on. But there was definitely that mentality. Why I'm using that as an example, is probably that Lambert team were better than the sum of their parts.
Yeah.
And that was a result of Steve's mentality. Whereas you kind of have the other extreme this season, Man United are a prime example. We saw them a couple of weeks ago at Norwich, and they're the opposite of Steve's mentality. They had this kind of superiority complex, and they waltzed around the pitch. And they look like just a collection of individuals.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Norwich, we haven't got that siege mentality at the moment to kind of take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So I definitely think siege mentality.
How do you generate that, though?
Well, I don't know. Well, maybe you have to lose your ground and move into some high park. Maybe that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
That ground sharing of Lowestoft is the solution.
I think you've got to feel like the world's against you, haven't you? And it kind of brings the team together, doesn't it?
It can go one of two ways. Because obviously, I'm pretty sure Norwich players feel like the world's against them at the moment.
Yeah.
And there's not really anyone grabbing the team by the scruff of the neck. You kind of felt that Lambert and Holt and players like Tierney and, you know, Johnson as well. They weren't players that, and Johnny Howson as well, to a certain extent, they weren't going to accept that. They were like, you know, they'd pull you through. They'd grab players by the scruff of the neck and pull you through. We don't necessarily have that. We've got a lot of nice players at the club at the moment.
Yeah.
And obviously, Grant Hanley probably does fit into that mould, but obviously he's injured at the moment.
Yeah.
Grabbing.
And you need a few, don't you, as well?
Yeah, we haven't really got a character in that team, for want of a better. We haven't really got a Grant.
Yeah.
Or like Crystal Palace have their Zaha.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm trying to think of anyone at Charlton who've had over the years. But
Scott Parker was there.
Oh, Scott Parker, yeah, exactly.
Their main man, wasn't he?
Yeah, and absolutely, Scott Parker. And but he's got one sort of talisman. We don't really, I mean, Pukki is a talismanic effect in that team, but the nature of how he plays, it's not like a Grant Holt character. He's a centre forward, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's going to do what
he concentrates on what he has to do.
Yeah, and he's quite a quiet character.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely not slating TV Pukki.
Yeah.
For 1 minute.
Yeah.
Okay. He's the man. But you know, we do lack that character somewhere on the pitch.
Yeah.
So I think the season mentality is a thing, and maybe that was what Charlton.
It certainly seems that way.
Success.
So I think they stayed in the top flight for 3 or 4 seasons. And in all that time, they were playing at Selhurst Park. So,
yeah.
I mean, our first ever meeting against them in the top flight was that following year, and we beat them 2-1 away. And then the Carrow Road return, it's a game that lives long in my memory, Phil. So me and a select group of boys from Archbishop Sancroft High School had the honour of being ball boys.
No way! You were ball boy, amazing!
It was.
A mascot.
So it was the 3rd of January 1987, so a nice winter's afternoon. We all went up in the school minibus, had sandwiches in the boardroom.
Excellent.
Had free access to the changing rooms.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, got the autograph book out.
Yeah, you met all the players, I assume, yeah?
Yes, yeah. I'm trying to think what else, and I imagine it's probably a bit more of a day-out package these days.
I think a lot of them tend to be youth teamers, don't they, these days, the ball boys?
Yeah, it's almost become like a job, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like a rite of passage.
Whereas, yeah, we were ball boy amateurs, all making our debuts.
So did he get involved in the dark arts, you know, when a Charlton player comes over to you for the ball and you sort of like roll it just away from him?
No chance. Would be far too intimidated to do that.
Absolutely.
I can't remember too much else before the game, and we went out, obviously running out onto the Carrow Pitch was exhilarating experience.
Yeah.
I was very, very lucky. I got allocated the safe stand.
Yeah.
And there was two of us on the safe stand. And I was the bit between the safe stand and the river end.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was all very friendly and
polite.
Whereas a couple of my mates, they had the nightmare shift. They were up at the Barclay end and up where the away terrace was.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't have enjoyed that.
And I mean, this is 1987, so back in those days, even the ball boys were fair game.
Yeah, that's what they thought. Football was fairly unsanitised then, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think I touched the ball once.
Did you?
In fact, yeah.
Oh, well, that's all right. I'll take that.
Yeah.
You didn't keep it, did you?
I could have got an assist, couldn't I? Quick throw back to the Norwich player.
Yeah, you've seen that. I mean, like, you know, at times at Norwich, a ball boy with the assist. I want to know what happens to the balls that go over the stadium at Carrow Road. I should have done this on Monday, actually, rather than go to the football, but just hang around, like, outside the stadium, wait for the balls to come over.
See if you can control it. That would be a party trick, wouldn't it? Could you control a ball that's coming out of the stadium?
I mean, I
take it down in one touch.
Yeah, I used to struggle to control a flat-sized four ball, you know. You know the football we always had, which you played on the concrete tennis courts with?
Yeah.
Ripped to shreds, all the leathers, like, worn off it.
Yeah.
You can control them easily because
there's no air in them, is
exactly,
there?
Exactly, yeah. So I'm not sure how I'd get on with, like, an actual proper football.
Yeah, maybe we should do that. I'll be behind the Gerald stand. You could be behind the City stand.
Yeah. Just wait for them to come over.
We'll see how many we can collect.
I just wonder if it's a ball boy's job, is because they're quite valuable. They're like 100 quid, those balls, aren't they? They're genuinely a lot of money. I just wonder if, like, there's a ball boy actually employed outside the ground there. As soon as they come over, you have to go and run and get it.
Maybe when you're in League One.
Yeah.
I think the Premier League gravy chain is, they can afford to let a few balls go. I think I remember not wanting the ball to come anywhere near me.
Yeah.
So obviously you're suddenly, you know, in the limelight, aren't you?
Well, that was always my approach to football anyway.
Yeah.
Keep away from the ball.
But there was a notable incident in that game. And as it happened, it appeared on the 9 o'clock news that night.
Were you the first ever ball boy to get sent off?
The game finished 1-1. It was generally an uneventful game. Norwich's equaliser was quite controversial.
Okay.
And as a result, a Charlton player kind of went up to the referee and didn't do anything. It wasn't like a Di Canio where he pushed him.
Yeah.
But the referee lost his balance and he knocked himself out. I think he banged his head on the pitch. Obviously would have been quite hard being in January, and knocked himself out. So, you know, it was quite a big deal.
Wow.
Yeah, and the Charlton player was kind of, it was one of those, you know, where the whole team suddenly comes up and surrounds the ref without quite touching him, but they're kind of in his face. And I think he sort of, you know, lost had to move back and lost his balance. And I presume he was okay in the end. Obviously they had to get the substitute ref on, and
I love that.
It featured on the 9 o'clock news, and I'm sure I could see myself in the background, perched on my stool.
Wow!
Yeah.
So you're nationally famous.
I'll take that. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's a good one. I've never seen a referee get knocked out before. Okay.
I was going to ask, have you got any memories of officials suffering injuries?
Yeah, so I was at Preston a few years ago where the lino pulled a hammy.
Okay,
and
yeah.
And then the fourth official had to run the line. And then they had to get someone from the crowd. It's one of those calls. Is anybody
Spud,
here? Yeah, Spud Fawnd. I think he's quite an infamous Norwich fan. A bit of a legend. And a very nice guy from the council. He's a qualified ref. So he got the honour of having to don a tracksuit top quickly and hold a board up.
I don't know, would that rule extend to, would he have been allowed to actually referee the game in the middle?
I don't know. I mean, I presume there's a chain of command. I presume
he'd have to have three or four injuries before he got to that.
And by that situation. Point, I think the game's probably called off. because obviously the Lions were the assistant referees, obviously qualified referees, so they'd be first up. Yeah. And obviously the fourth referees, a fourth official is obviously a ref as well. So, you know, they're obviously, I think by the time you get to like three or four, I mean, you'd probably ask what's going on for a start. You'd probably start phoning up betting companies to wonder why the referees are getting injured.
Technically, in theory, Spud could have refereed the actual game, but
that is, to my knowledge, that's true.
Unlikely in practice to ever occur. I guess he couldn't because he would be deemed as being a Norwich fan, wouldn't he?
Well, that's also true. But I kind of like
so you need someone in the crowd who's impartial. Qualified referee.
But it does actually genuinely make you wonder why they don't, like, the money that goes on in the top flights, and they've seen a championship game, but surprised there isn't like a substitute referee just in the crowd. Because,
or
like,
a squad of them.
Can you imagine that? Just say, you know, you're like, imagine you're a qualified referee and you do like Holston games or whatever, you know, local area games, decent standard, don't get me wrong, but like, and the next thing you know, you kind of had your day trip to Old Trafford and you just, it's a referee in the crowd. Next thing you know, you've kind of got, like, you know, back in the day, Alex Ferguson and Jose Mourinho. You're holding the subs board in between them. And you're like, calm down, lads, calm down.
Thing is, though, it's not being a qualified referee. It's a lot more than that, isn't it? It's how would you... You could be as qualified as you want, but me or you couldn't go on a pitch at Old Trafford and handle Premier League players, could we?
It's exactly what we
Because they'd have no respect for us. We'd, you know, we'd probably... wouldn't be able to cope with that level of intensity and that scrutiny. And it doesn't matter that you know the rules of the game, does it?
Got like Ronaldo and, you know, in your face telling you've done it wrong. He'd be like, you know, he's a big guy anyway. And you'd be like, obviously.
You'd doubt every decision, wouldn't you? And
you would absolutely.
I think you'd lose your head.
And also the speed of it. I mean, that's the thing. It's always easy to referee when you're in the crowd and you haven't actually got to referee. When you're actually at pitch level involved in a Premier League game at speed, you've got no
So what chance. We're basically saying is how impressive it is for someone to referee a game at that level.
I think it really is. And I think referees get a really hard deal. I mean, they do make weird decisions. I'm not doubting that. But I think at the end of the day, they give what they think has happened.
Yeah.
There's no reason why... there's a lot of talk about referees just want to be a centre of attention. I'm not sure how true that is. I think you probably need to be a unique character to be a referee. I think that's fair. But, you know, also at the end of the day, if you're a referee and you're getting the news, it's because you've done it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. The best ones are the ones that you don't remember, aren't they?
Exactly. You must know it as well as a referee. When you give a decision and everyone's on you and you think, oh, maybe you got that wrong. It can't be a great feeling.
So how did Spud do in the Preston game?
So the only thing he had to do was raise the injury time board because it was quite near the end of the game. And actually, I think ironically, after saying never leave early, I think that was one of the couple of games I did actually have to leave early because of a gig. And I think that was about the 80th minute. It was about a 10-minute delay.
Yeah.
So I think it got to the point where the game was about to restart. I thought, well, I'd better shoot off anyway. It's quite, you know. So I didn't really see the end of it, but I did see him raise the board and he got a massive round of applause for it. It's fair play to that.
And much confusion amongst the Preston.
Yeah, exactly that.
So obviously very fond memories of that. But do you ever fancy being a ball boy or do you think your time's gone now?
I was up for it. You know, I think I'd be one of those cool ball boys. You know, you see them these days when they sit on their stool like, legs out in front of them, arms crossed, the ball comes near them, there's nod it back to the player. I mean, I'll probably go wrong and break my nose.
So, Charlton, I got here, next point I was going to make is there's a couple of defeats against Charlton that proved to be the final straw for Norwich managers.
Yeah.
First up, our longest serving manager, Ken Brown.
Yeah.
His last ever game in the Norwich dugout was a 2-0 away defeat at Charlton.
Yeah.
On the 7th of November 1987. So that was our 10th defeat in 15. And he was almost a victim of his success as the season before we'd finished 5th under him.
Yeah.
So we had this awful start to the season and got into this losing run. And Charlton were I think we replaced them, so that took us bottom, and that took them off the bottom.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, sadly.
Yeah.
I actually, when I was looking up this game, considering this is a top flight game, the crowd that day was 5,000.
Really?
Yeah.
5,000?
Now, I know they were tenants, so
yeah,
mitigating factors, but that's still low, isn't it?
That's incredibly low. Yeah. Unbelievably low.
Yeah, he was shown the door, and it actually, to be fair, we did mention this when we did the Crystal Palace episode last week with Robert Chase. Yeah, a very tough decision to sack a manager like that. It had so much success, but Dave Stringer came in and he did turn our season around. So we ended up finishing mid table that season.
Yeah,
had a run of games where we were undefeated in 6-7, and came back. So could it have happened if Brown had stayed? Maybe, but sometimes, I don't know, you get in these ruts, don't you, and you just don't know how to get out of it.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think that's the thing. Sometimes you just need a change of mood as much as anything.
Yeah.
Which I thought was maybe the key at Norwich about 6 weeks ago, but probably I've unthought that now.
And so who was the second manager who, after a defeat to Charlton, was shown the door?
Was this also in the FA Cup?
It was in the FA Cup, third round, 2009.
And Mr. Glenn Rogan, wasn't it?
It was.
So I was there, because that was the anniversary of the 59ers.
Yes, yeah.
So it was quite a big event, obviously being an infamous cup run in 59. So we lost to Charlton, who were the same league as us. They were the same league.
They were, yeah.
I remember it being a pretty abject performance, because it was one of the few managers to get sacked after an FA Cup game. I think Neil Adams also took a step back after an FA Cup game.
Yeah, you're right.
Opposed to a league game. But yeah, I was there for that. I don't really remember much about the game, other than thought that was probably the final straw, as it turned out to be. So
it was one of those games, I guess, where the atmosphere is pretty toxic again.
I don't really remember much about it.
Maybe
apathy more than toxic.
Yeah.
Probably.
Which is even worse in some cases, isn't it?
Exactly that. It was funny, wasn't it? Because the previous season, obviously, we were rock bottom, I think, under Grant, and Grover came in and we went on a really good run.
Yeah, we almost got to the playoffs, didn't we?
Yeah, there's one point we're talking about the playoffs, which is the beauty about the league.
There's
what you love about the championship. It doesn't matter where you are, there's always that hint, always that possibility of the playoffs. But then the next season, it just got slowly worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
Scored us full of loanees who weren't that interested.
Yeah, and I think that game was probably, like you say, something had to happen at that point, didn't it? I think, things had got quite bad, and the cup defeat show, we actually beat them 1-0 at home in the league just a couple of weeks before that cup defeat, which I hadn't realised. But moving on to probably the games that you were referring to at the start of the podcast, and the first one came at the end of that season, didn't it?
Yeah.
So contrasting emotions at the Valley fell.
Yeah.
So the 4-2 defeat.
Yeah. Well, I remember it well. It was hilarious.
You didn't go, did you?
No. So what had happened, that was literally, so I'd injured my knee. I'd seen quite a lot of games that season, because the season before that, I'd injured my knee playing hockey.
And this was the season before your first season ticket, wasn't it?
Well, so this is it. So I'd injured my, so I'd always said that I'd play hockey, I'd play sport on a Saturday until I couldn't, then I'd get a season ticket holder, situations, allowing that. And so what happened was that I'd injured my knee season beforehand, and it'd taken about a year to properly get to the bottom of it. I then had an ACL reconstruction on it.
Oh, wow.
And so I knew I was going to miss the next 18 months of sport no matter what. So I thought, next season, I'll just get a season ticket for next year.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be playing sport, definitely not, so I'll go down and watch Norwich. And I remember having the operation, I think it was a Sunday game, if I'm right.
It was, yeah.
Because I had the operation on Friday, spent the day and Saturday in hospital, and then the Sunday, I remember, I couldn't do much, I was literally at home recovering, and I just had, listening to Radio Norfolk, listening to the game. And it was one of those games I'd kind of accepted relegation before then. I think there's a hint we could get out of it.
Well, interesting enough, I did double check this, and if we had won that game, we still would have gone down. So it wasn't actually the defining game.
It wasn't.
Think. Yeah.
I think if results had gone our way, we could have stayed up. It was so unlikely that
everything
had gone. So I kind of wasn't that disappointed then. And it's one of those ones I kind of had nothing else to do. So I just listened to Canary Call, with almost for the comedy value. You know, it's like I was talking to someone about cricket last night, and saying, "Well, this is embarrassing." It's like, no, it's not embarrassing. It was embarrassing 1.5 Test matches ago. It's now just hilarious.
Yeah,
I've kind of got to
that gallows humour, isn't it?
It was, and I've kind of got to that point of Norwich. I thought I'd listen to Canary Call for a bit of a laugh, and kind of accepted it, because that was the other thing, is that they went down with us, didn't they?
Yeah,
they were already down that day. And for us to have a slight hint to stay up and still capitulate like that was pretty miserable. I think we drew 2-2 at home.
We did, yeah. I looked that up. It escaped my memory. It was in September, so it was early in the Paul Lambert reign.
Yeah, it was early. And I think we got a fairly late minute equaliser.
Which was part of the norm that season, wasn't it? Yeah.
And I remember that Phil Parkinson, I think, was the manager at the time.
Yeah.
And he had a bit of a moan about basically a bit of sour grapes, like, oh, we can't afford to just go and buy a player like Grant Holt.
Right.
So we were considered kind of a big fish, although it then transpired, we were in a bit of financial trouble. But yeah, I remember the away game because I watched it on the Gun Club. They had a bing back at the Gun Club.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so we watched it up there. With the twins, and I'm pretty sure my sister was there, and me and Rob Goodson both got interviewed for TV afterwards, and my interview wasn't used. So
brilliant. You're trumping my ball boy experience here.
Oh no, it wasn't my, they used Rob, I didn't want to. So I'm now trying to reinvent my media career in other form. It was the Admiral Nelson.
It was,
and I remember him having the coolest ever celebration, because I can't
remember the goal. Was it header?
Header from a corner. Yeah. It was the ultimate story of redemption for him, because he started off fairly poorly, as everyone did in that. And he was one of the ones picked out as being particularly bad.
Did he play in the Colchester?
Yeah, he did, and he looked pretty awful. And he then went on to become a very, very good defender at that level. The thing was with him, he wasn't a great footballer for that level, respectfully, but he also knew that.
Yeah.
And so he didn't try and play the ball too much.
Yeah. He's a decent defender, wasn't he?
And you know, if he tried getting the ball out, honestly, he'd struggle to keep it on the pitch. He'd just boot it and he'd probably go out for a throw-in.
Yeah.
But in terms of defence, he was unbelievably brave. He never lost anything in the air. He was hard as iron. He was absolutely, you know, the man. And so that was a good little redemption story.
It was.
And for both for Norwich and for him, was obviously going down the valley the previous season. It's just funny how it works out. And I remember him nodding in the winner, as it proved to be. It was 1-0, wasn't it? And he just walked over to the corner flag, looked up the crowd, sort of pointed at someone, and just sort of folded his arms and looked at it. And everyone else just jumped on him nuts. I was like, what a man.
Yeah, did he only play that one season for us?
So he went on to play for us the following season, but we brought in defensive reinforcements, and he moved on. He sold him at January, and he came back to like a massive ovation. Yeah, he should be remembered very fondly.
Yeah, right, I've got fond memories. Yeah, he sort of, like you say, just really that one season, wasn't it? He kind of then...
Yeah, and he was, but he was that character we're talking about.
Yeah.
He was a genuine leader.
Yeah.
And like I say, what I liked about him is he didn't try and do more than he was capable of.
Yeah.
But he also scored an overhead kick away at Hartlepool that season. He was a phenomenal player, yeah.
Do you think it's largely irrelevant that we won promotion back at the Valley? Do you believe in exercising these demons? Or
A little bit. I mean,
do you like that?
It's more kind of poetic, isn't
poetic,
it?
Yeah.
It's like a little bit of poetic redemption, isn't it?
Yeah.
That, like the previous season when we played so poorly then and literally surrendered our position in the league so meekly, to then go and win away there and probably give, you know, the away fans are normally the same people on the whole. So to give those away fans that moment back to where probably what had hurt so much the season beforehand, I think that's great.
Yeah.
And a little bit of poetic license there, so be pleased about that.
Yeah, were they the two games you were going to touch on?
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
And I was pretty sure that Charlton we lost in the FA Cup as well. I couldn't 100% remember.
Yeah. And that was it for me on Charlton. You got any other memories? It's not, other than my ball boy day out, I can't really remember watching Charlton much. Or
no, I've got nothing really to add. That was about it. I remember them being a decent team back in their heyday of the early 2000s. I remember them having that Danish guy who was the fastest player in the league at the time playing for them. He was absolutely rapid, but not much good. Yeah, anything else that season. But yeah, so I like Charlton. They're a good team, aren't they?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that's it, Phil. I think we've done the score predictions. I mean, feel free to chuck a prediction in if you'd like on this one.
Well, it's but a tough one.
This would just be for pride. You're not going to get any points for this.
Oh, I have officially lost, have I? I think.
Well, I was then having a look.
Oh, we've got a Palace today, haven't we?
Yeah, but I mirrored your score there.
Oh, that's tactical voting. I like it.
So I'm two ahead of you.
The only way I can win is if you inexplicably change your score line.
No, that's not. There's a potential spanner in the works in West Ham.
Oh, forgot about that.
As yeah. It happened, yeah. And we did go different on West Ham.
Okay. So it's still all to play for. In terms of predictions, I mean, you don't know what. No matter how badly we're playing, there's still a massive gap between Championship and League One. A massive gap between Championship and League One.
Yeah.
Having said that, we're not going to play a particularly strong side. On the other hand, we might have to play a strong side. It might be all we've got available.
Yeah.
I expect to see Angus Gunn play. Probably not Brian.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple of the more peripheral players, but I think we'll win 2-0.
Yeah, it's all about 2-1, maybe. Attitude and, yeah, like you say.
Being professional.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think we're going to win. I'm not sure whether we'll be there. We might go, might be. We're still pondering.
Talking about it. So the tickets go on sale for us a couple of these times. So who knows? But it'll be good to get there. Like, yep. I haven't done an away game this year.
Exactly. And that would be a good one, actually. So,
correct.
All right. Well, thank you for your time, Phil, for doing the special.
No,
despite being on that downward curve.
No, it was always a pleasure. So very much appreciate your time. Thank you.
Excellent. And hopefully the FA Cup gods will give us another special.
A cup run.
In the fourth round. Yeah.
Maybe we can get a cup run.
Exactly. And if you get Ipswich in the fourth... No, they're out, aren't they?
They're the Barrow.
Okay.
That's right.
On that note, okay, Phil, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Cheers. Bye.
Bye, mate.